Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking
Welcome
it to the
to
next...
Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level, with David Clark, here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Hey, promo man, get with it. You're behind the eight ball tonight. Yes, do be welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks. This is your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show, as has been said, this show will encourage you to keep an open mind. And when you do so, you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. So tonight I'm welcoming back Rochelle Wissoff-Fields. She is the author of This, That, and Sometimes the Other, an anthology of short stories, which she also has illustrated. Those stories have been featured in several other anthologies, including two editions of Voices. A woman of Jewish descent and the granddaughter of Eastern European immigrants, Rochelle has a close personal connection to Jewish history, which has become a recurring theme throughout much of her writing. Growing up, she was heavily influenced by the Shalom Aleichem stories, as well as Fiddler on the Roof. Her two novels, Please Say Kaddish for Me and From Silt to Ashes, were born of her desire to share the darker side of these beloved tales, the history that can be difficult to view, much less embrace. Before becoming an author, Rochelle attended the Kansas City Art Institute, where she studied painting and lithography. Her preferred media are pen and ink, pencil and watercolor. But her artistic talent served her well in her temporary career as a cake decorator. She and her husband, Jan, have raised three sons in the Kansas City metro area and now live in Belton, Missouri. When she takes a break from writing and illustrating, Rochelle enjoys swimming and dancing. She's also addicted to the blog, Addicted to Purple. Maintains the blog, Addicted to Purple. Maybe you're addicted to it, Rochelle, are you?
I am. I'm addicted to blogging and purple.
Ah, I love the color purple. What is it about purple that speaks to you?
Well, it's royalty. It's, mm-hmm. I don't know, it's just very, very pleasing. It's been my favorite color since I was 7 years old.
Ah, well, I guess there's no further explanation needed. Blue's my favorite color, and purple's my second favorite color, and I'm glad to have you back. How are you tonight?
Very well, thank you.
Well, from what we were talking about before the show, it sounds like you have a very exciting year coming up. And I'd like to talk about your books, Please Say Kaddish for Me and From Silt to Ashes. But why don't you tell the listening audience what honor has been bestowed upon you?
Yes, I just found out this week that Please Say Kaddish for Me is going to be on display at the American Booksellers Association Expos. It will be in Chicago in May, in Orlando, Florida in June, Frankfurt and Beijing and London at different times throughout the summer. So I'm
that is
planning
amazing,
on
amazing exposure you're going to get.
I'm pretty excited. Another author and I, Caroline Giamanco, and I are planning on going to Chicago in May. And then also my agent, Jeannie Loyacano, has submitted my books to the Historical Novel Society. And both books are going to be reviewed So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that they might be an editor's choice.
I certainly hope so. That would be a real coup for you.
It would.
Yeah. Well, we talked about Please Say Kaddish for Me the last time, but since it's part of a trilogy, why don't we start out talking a little bit about that before we go on to talk about From Silt and Ashes.
Right. Well, Please Say Kaddish for Me is the story of Chava Cohen, and I do start out by calling it The Dark Side of Fiddler on the Roof, because people know Fiddler on the Roof, and they know the singing, the dancing, and a little bit of hardship the Russian Jews had. But in reality, the pogroms, the persecutions in Russia were the warm-up or the dress rehearsal for the Holocaust. And we're talking about 40 years prior to that. So Chava Cohen is a young woman who in the beginning loses her entire family. They are massacred and she alone escapes. And so begins her journey. And she escapes barefoot. She's left with a physical disability. And she's a little bit of a Yentl in that her father was a rabbi and has taught her things that girls were not supposed to know in those days, that she could read Hebrew and even had a what they would have called a bas mitzvah in those days, the female version of bar mitzvah, which didn't really happen until 1922 in the synagogue.
I never realized that. And, you know, until I had interviewed you, I was totally ignorant of the pogrom in Russia and how that was a precursor to the Holocaust. Maybe you would talk a little bit about that before we go on to talk about your book some more.
Yes. Well, my family actually came from Russia to escape the pogroms, but usually what it boiled down to, and the pogrom in Please Say Kaddish for Me in Kishinev, what it boiled down to was the Jews killed Christ, let's kill the Jews. And that was, you know, always the excuse. The Tsar was in agreement with it. The police would turn their head, and people were butchered. And children were, it was horrible things, decapitated, the women were raped. And, I mean, anti-Semitism was, it goes back for centuries, but in Russia it was really horrible. And even Jews don't realize that this happened before the Holocaust. Everyone knows that. But I guess my mission in writing these books is to show that Hitler didn't just rise up out of the ground and say, oh, I'm going to kill Jews now.
Well, you know, it always amazes me, this mentality of let's kill the Jews because they killed Christ, when Jesus himself was a Jew. It makes absolutely no sense to me at all.
It doesn't make sense to me either, because I am honestly a believer in Jesus, or we call him Yeshua by his Hebrew name.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I don't think he was trying to establish a new religion either, which is crazy.
Yeah. It is insane. But and the irony in this, and I have to share this story because I look back on it and go, really? I had an agent turn me down because she said my book was too much like Fiddler on the Roof, and a story that everybody already knew.
Hmm.
And I was incredulous because, as I said, I was at a family reunion last weekend and speaking with a cousin about my book. He didn't even know our own family history, as having come from Russia, or about the pogroms. So I want to go back.
Well, there
and
isn't
ask
anything about the pogrom and Fiddler on the Roof, is there?
There is an allusion to it.
Oh, okay.
And in the wedding scene where the police come in and sort of mess things up, and
oh.
It's a very watered down version of what actually happened.
No, I'd forgotten that. Yeah,
don't get me wrong. I love Fiddler on the Roof. I can recite it chapter and verse.
Mm. Well, please tell us more about your book.
Okay. Well, it is a love story also against the horrors that are going on. Hava falls in love with a rabbi's son, and he falls in love with her. But unfortunately, he is betrothed to someone else. And the someone else happens to be Hava's adopted sister. So when Arl, who is her love interest, marries Gittel, Hava's sister, Hava runs away to Kishinev, where she is taken in by yet another family. So it's not just a horror story, it's also a love story set against this backdrop of the horrors of what the Jews were going through. And ultimately, I was at a workshop this weekend, and we had a haiku class, and we were challenged to summarize our book in 17 syllables.
Oh, my God.
So, which was fun. So here is Please Say Cottage in haiku.
Okay.
Home crumbles in flames. All is lost to the haters. Blessings follow her.
Oh, I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And so that's basically what it is about. Kishinev was the first internationally recognized pogrom. It had been going on in the area called the Pale of Settlement for some time. But this one, over 50 people were killed. And so the American government and Theodore Roosevelt tried to get the Tsar to denounce the pogrom. And, of course, he wouldn't do it.
So let me try to place this. Would this be the late 1900s? I'm trying to remember when the Tsar and his family were assassinated.
I believe they were assassinated in, was it 1914?
Oh, okay.
Please Say Kaddish opens up in 1899, and the Kishinev pogrom was in 1903.
Okay. What kind of research did you have to do?
Oh, tons. I started out wanting to write about my family. Nobody knew anything. So I started out with the Kishinev pogrom. I was interested in that. I did a lot on the internet. And just amazing history is available if people want to research. Some was based in scripture. I have a minimal knowledge of Hebrew, so I used that. A lot of blogs, Jewish genealogy, websites, and just kept picking things up. Old newspapers. Old newspapers have a wealth of information.
Well, it sounds like it was a real project.
Yeah, it was. And the first book, I mean, I started out 10 years ago and simultaneously wrote the sequel. So it's gone through. It was my Learn to Write book, because I had no background as an author, as a writer. I just had this story that was burning in me and wrote a manuscript. It was 114,000 words. I showed it to a friend who says, well, I'm a writer, and she looked at it and she said, this is a story that needs to be told, but you've got a lot of work to do.
Mm.
And at first I bristled. It's like, oh, you mean it's not perfect?
I'm laughing because I can relate.
Yeah. I think anybody can, because life is a journey, and we learn along the way. And I've always said, one of my mottos is, if you are too old to learn, then just pull the coffin lid over, because you're already dead.
Yeah. That's a good motto. I used to be a social worker, and I had a client who was demented and dying from cancer, and she kept saying this one truth over and over, and that is, one never stops learning. And as a writer, that certainly is the case. You know, when you're starting out, you know, there's so much enthusiasm involved in your writing project, and then you come to realize that the first draft is just the beginning of the journey. You want to tell us a little bit about the rest of the journey?
Sure. You know, over the years, I've gone to different workshops and writing conferences, and every time I went, you know, I learned something new. And I would go back and edit. But, you know, once that book was finished, I started on the sequel, and which, From Silt and Ashes, picks up where Please Say Kaddish for Me leaves off. Because ultimately, Arl and Chava are able to immigrate to America. And
well,
I have the feeling I haven't quite answered your question.
Well, that's okay. We'll get back to it if it's important. Tell us more about From Silt and Ashes.
Okay, From Silt and Ashes picks up after the pogrom in Kishinev. And Arl and Chava have a wealthy friend who Chava worked for in the first book. He is a German music professor who fell in love with Chava and lost out to Arl. And so now From Silt and Ashes picks up there in Kansas City and beginning their new life there. But one of the reasons I wrote a sequel was because in 1905 there was another pogrom in Odessa, Ukraine. So part of the family has gone there. And it's more Arl and Chava's story, Ulrich's story. They have another friend who was a Russian doctor. And there's probably four different stories going on at the same time in From Silt and Ashes. And I almost had more fun writing the second one than I did the first. Because
I
learned...
Why was that?
I'm sorry. I think the characters grew, and you know, it's like they're not just fictitious characters to me; they're real people.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept growing. I kept learning things about them. I mean, writing is an amazing process because the characters actually start telling their stories. And I basically am at the keyboard going, yeah, uh-huh, okay, tell me more.
Well, did you ever set out to write more than one book about these characters? How did that come to pass?
Oh, that's a good question, because I really didn't. I had friends saying, oh, well, you know, I know there's going to be a sequel. And I'm like, no, this is it. You know, once I get done with this, I'm done. And I picked up a book on Kansas City history, or the history of the Jews in Kansas City. It's called America's Promise. And I came across an article in there that all of the synagogues in Kansas City came together after the 1905 pogrom in Odessa and had a meeting because so many of them had family overseas that were involved in this. So they came together to try and do something about it, and it turned into a shouting match. You've heard the expression, two Jews, three opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what happened in this meeting. So the more I read, I thought, oh, I have to go back and write this story. So it just, you know, one thing led to another, and it's like there were certain things that I had started to write in Please Say Kaddish for me that it was almost the beginning of another book. So I had to write another book. It was just that simple.
I see. Well, tell us more. Is there going to be more after From Silt and Ashes?
I'm glad you asked. In fact, my publisher and my agent have already more or less made it public that As One Must, One Can, the third in the trilogy, will be out this year. All I have to do is write it.
How long does it take you to write a book? I know that first one must have taken you quite a while. Have you found
the first one?
Found the process that has gotten a little more streamlined as you've gone along?
It really has. Because with Please Say Kaddish, I was a novice. And really, From Silt and Ashes has gone through several edits, not as many as Please Say Kaddish for me. But now it's like I had started As One Must, One Can 5 years ago and have come back to it, and it's going through a lot of changes. But I've matured as a writer, and so there are pitfalls that I know to look out for. I'm probably falling into new ones. But yeah, it's like I've grown along with Chava. She started out as a 16-year-old girl in the first book, and she's now 25 and a mother of a very special child. And so it's very exciting. I'm finding out some things about Kansas City history that are playing into this book. And Chava has a daughter in this book who is a child prodigy. And she's 4 years old and is already a classical pianist. So Ulrich is still, you know, has come to live in Kansas City, and he's getting ready to take little Rachel on a European tour. And more than that, I won't add, because I've got some surprises in it that I don't want to give away.
I don't blame you. Well, the question is this. Is the storyline going to continue after your book that's in the pipeline?
Oh, that is an unanswered question. But there will be another book because, as you mentioned before, I do the artwork. And I've had the amazing fortune because of my agent. Well, you know Jeannie Loyocano because she's been on your show a couple of times.
Yes.
When she found out that I was doing the artwork, she pushed very hard for me to do the covers, which I've heard that it's a rare thing, if it ever happens at all, that an author can do her own artwork on the covers of her books.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the publisher, Argus Books, has come back and asked me to do a book of illustrations as a coffee table companion book to go with the three novels.
Nice.
Yeah. 'Cause I've been doing character studies, and I do the character's portrait and then post them with a little blurb online. So these are going into a book. And those can be found on Addicted to Purple.
How do people find your blog? Is that, do they just Google Addicted to Purple, or is there a website connected to it?
Well, the actual website is RochelleWissoffFields.wordpress.com.
Would you spell that?
Yeah. Okay. RochelleWissoffFields. And it's all one word.
Beautiful. You know what I'm curious about? Did you work any of your own genealogy into your books?
Roughly, because so little is known. We're just starting, my husband and I are getting into the genealogies of our families, and I have found a little more about my mother's side of the family. And I've used some family names, and you know, they were here at that time. Arles becoming, you know, going from becoming a rabbi to becoming a tailor is based loosely on my grandfather, who came over from Russia in 1907, and according to my mother, was a self-taught tailor. And that was how he made his living.
Hmm.
But,
well, go ahead.
I was going to say that one of my biggest regrets, my grandfather passed away when I was in my early 20s. And he was not an approachable person. I knew he had escaped the pogroms. I knew he had come over here from Poland. But I never had the foresight to ask him questions. And so I've had to invent a lot. I really wish I could go back and ask him the question.
Mm.
You know, he was an Orthodox Jew. He had the accents. He went for prayers every morning. And I just honestly didn't know him very well at all.
When did you start to get interested in his history?
About 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Around the time you started writing the books?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if it's the age. I just really wanted to connect with my roots. Not that, you know, as a young girl, I read the Sholem Aleichem stories that Fiddler on the Roof is based on. I think I read The Diary of Anne Frank when I was in fifth grade. So, I mean, there's always been that connection there, but it was something I walked away from. You know, I followed other paths. I married a man who's not Jewish. We raised three children. And I was more involved in just living and making a living than getting in touch with my roots. And so over the past 10 years, that's been something that's been very important to me. It's been longer than 10 years, because in 2001, I realized a dream of becoming bat mitzvah and was able to chant the Hebrew and read from the Torah. And it was, that experience is right up there with the birth of my children and my wedding.
Wow. Well, what propelled you to start digging into your roots some more?
That's a good question. I think, you know, it was a desire that was always there. I wanted to go to Hebrew school as a girl. And we didn't have the money. My grandfather paid for my brother to go to Hebrew school, but not for me because I was a girl. And that was always a source of resentment. And later on, I found that I could do that on my own, that it was not too late. Even in my 40s, I could still become bat mitzvah. And from there, I learned Hebrew that I had not learned as a child. And, you know, realize I am of Ashkenazic roots, and I just wanted to know more about it.
What does that mean? I'm not familiar with that term.
Okay, I'm sorry. Ashkenazic, they're, and I didn't learn this till several years ago. The Ashkenazic Jews came from Eastern Europe. They're the ones you think of when you think of Fiddler on the Roof. And even a friend of mine, when I wrote the dialogue in my books, he says, well, the dialogue sounds like it came out of Fiddler on the Roof. I said, well, you don't understand. I grew up hearing these speech patterns. These are my people. I mean, I sit down and watch Fiddler on the Roof and weep because that's where I came from. There are Sephardic Jews, and they came from, like, Italy and Spain and, you know, the Mediterranean. And we kind of now are meeting in the middle in Israel, which I did get to go to Israel in 2006. It was an amazing experience.
Oh, tell us about that.
It was something I always wanted to do. We had, my husband inherited a large sum of money from an uncle, and he said, if you could do one thing, what would it be? And I said, I want to go to Israel. So I went with a group from my synagogue in 2006, and we went to the ruins, we went to the wall, and I think one of the greatest experiences for me was praying at the wall. And, you know, we had a tevila, or a baptismal service, in the Sea of Galilee, which was, and really, you know, people look at, I mean, and I wondered about baptism. You know, we don't call it that, but the mikveh in Judaism is just that. I mean, it was not something the Christians invented. The Jews would cleanse themselves before going into the temple. And a Jewish woman will cleanse herself once a month to purify herself. And there is a mikveh or a bath. So that's kind of what we did in the Sea of Galilee, was we cleansed ourselves before God.
What are some of the things that you've learned about yourself since you've explored your heritage some more?
Wow. Think about that. I think I've discovered that I'm more like my parents than I realized. That my Judaism, my heritage is very important to me. That when I write about Chava, I'm putting myself into her. In fact, Jeannie says, you are Chava.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't you think that there's a lot of truth in it, that we are our characters? The author's
yes.
Characters. Yeah. You want to talk a little bit about
fact,
that?
Yeah, I find myself in little pieces. I mean, there are pieces of myself in each of the characters. I mean, Chava has a strong desire to learn. She's a survivor, which, you know, several years ago, if somebody, you know, said, oh, well, you're a survivor, I would have laughed, but I survived anorexia nervosa and look back on it now, and I don't even know that woman. So Chava has that kind of survival instinct. And she is, I guess I could liken my eating disorder to a pogrom that I survived, if that makes sense.
It does. It's a fitting metaphor, I think.
And I really hadn't thought of it until now, so you're the first one to share it. I'm sorry, go on.
No, please continue.
But I mean, even in some of the names, that in Rachel is Chava's daughter, who's born in the second book, and she is born with a handicap. But they name her Rachel Esther, and my Hebrew name is Rachel Esther. And we had a neighbor that used to call me Rachel Schwester, which just means Rachel's sister. And so I gave the character the nickname Rachel Schwester.
Oh.
So, and there's another character named Nettie Weinberg. Well, that was my maternal grandmother's name. So even the cover of Please Say Kaddish for Me, I sort of manipulated a photograph of my grandmother and my great-grandmother.
Beautiful.
So, yeah, there's a lot of me in these books and these characters. And Yessel Gitterman, who becomes Chava's father-in-law, is a rabbi who is blind, and he sees more than most people who are sighted see. And he's sort of, I think, the grandfather that I wish I'd had. There are elements of Sam Weiner in Yessel Gitterman.
I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the writing process. I know there are a lot of aspiring writers out there. I wondered if you'd be willing to talk a little bit about your journey and what's been involved for you as you've developed your craft and what some of the challenges have been, including both the disappointments and the triumphs.
Okay. Well, my process now is I'm up at 3 a.m, and that's my best time to write. I started out just, I mean, some writers will tell you, you know, just vomit it all on the page and get the story out and then go back and edit, which I did with the first one. Now I tend to write my chapters and then go back and edit them, write a few more chapters and go back and edit those, and being willing to slaughter the darlings, I think, is probably the biggest thing that I've learned. Is that the reader will never miss them. There are some things I've written that I thought, oh, this is so important to the story, and then go back later and find out they're not. Nothing is that important. It's always a learning process. And you have to have an open hand and be willing to let go of it. It's kind of like life. The things we hold on to the tightest are the things that we lose. It seems like it's different things at different times, but sometimes part of my writing process is swimming. When I can't think, then I go swimming, and that sort of breaks my writer's block.
Do you find that you encounter writer's block very often?
Not really. I said something about having writer's block one day, and a friend of mine said, and it was the longest 20 minutes of your life, right?
Oh.
But, you know, there are times that you kind of hit the wall, and that's the best time to just pull back. And for me, because I do have the writing or the painting, that's the best time to just pull away from the computer and pull out the paper and the pencil and the paintbrushes and do something else. Or sometimes it's writing something else. I'll go to my blog and write something there. And as far as disappointments, there have been a few. Although I've actually been fortunate. I was told one time that to be a true author, you have to have at least 100 rejections. And I pitched to about 4 agents before Jeannie accepted me. So I really didn't have to go far. She
wow.
read and believed in them. I've been very lucky with her. I can't say enough good things. And it took her 3 years to sell the book, so I don't know how many rejections there were there. But there's that waiting and wondering, is this really going to happen? And then when it did, it happened so fast it made my head swim.
Hmm. Was there editorial work to be done after you submitted to Jeannie?
There was. She made some suggestions. I really didn't have a lot of editing done by anybody else. Once we had the contracts, I had a friend that is very good at editing, and we hit both the novels very hard and got them what I felt was up to speed. Because
mm-hmm.
I found things that were weak and then sent them to Jeannie, and she was like, I still love them. And it was a month after we signed, after I signed the third contract with Jeannie, that I got a text. I was working at the time. I was decorating a cake, and I get a text saying, read your email. And the email started out, are you sitting down? Well, no, I wasn't. They sure heard me scream all over the grocery store.
Well, what kind of advice would you offer to new writers who are just beginning?
To develop a thick skin, to realize that one rejection isn't the end, and 5 rejections aren't the end.
Well, I think go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I would say also be teachable.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great one. I was just going to comment and excuse the interruption. I think that you are the exception to the rule that most people are going to face 99 out of 100 rejections. I think your advice about developing a thick skin is very apropos.
Yeah, and I can't say that I always achieve that, but I don't mope for very long. But like I said, to be teachable, because I don't think anybody, unless they're just exceptional, comes into writing with a perfect manuscript. And finding critique groups, that's also key. Is getting that outside opinion. And, you know, I had a wonderful critique group when I started out. There were 8 of us ladies, and the other women in the group were published authors. I was sort of the baby of the group. And I learned a lot from those people, and they encouraged me. You know, I don't know what I would have done without them. And writing conferences, that's where I met Jeannie. In fact, that's where I met Holly McClure, who at the time was training Jeannie to be an agent. And that was a divine appointment, because I wasn't even going to pitch to Holly, but we had spoken the night before, and she cornered me the next morning, and we spoke for an hour, which is a whole lot better than a 15-minute pitch.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, which was in 2008, the economy was down the tube. and she really wasn't taking new clients. But she sent me a handwritten letter to let me know that. So I'm not sure who Holly McClure is
or how she fits into your personal history.
Okay, I'll backtrack. Holly McClure had an agency, and Jeannie at the time was her assistant. And Holly had come to an Ozark Writers League conference as the agent taking pitches, and we connected. And she really felt that my book had, you know, should be published, but at the time she couldn't take it on. So she introduced me to Jeannie. So she was ultimately that divine appointment that led me to another divine appointment. Jeannie had accepted it, and I had another agent that I was pursuing at the time. I wasn't sure what to do at that point, and I had two agents saying, okay, I want to read it. But ultimately, the path led back to Jeannie, and... yes, that was the best thing that could have happened.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, how did you happen to make that decision?
Well, at the time, the decision to go with Jeannie,
mm-hmm.
I was a little bit nervous about approaching her again because I'd kind of put her off a couple of years before. And she was the one coming to the Ozark Writers League conference. And so there were two agents. And I talked to another writer who was one of Jeannie's clients. And she convinced me that that was the way to go. But I was so afraid that because I had changed things in the novel in that time, that Jeannie wouldn't want it. And a friend of mine said, well, ask her what she did like about it. And that's what I did. And Jeannie said, well, the history. You know, I didn't know any of that. And I said, well, the history hasn't changed. So within 2 months, she sent me an acceptance letter.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That must have felt good to you.
Oh, I have it framed on my wall.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about your writing?
Well, there is another big part of my writing. On my blog, I facilitate a photo prompt challenge called Friday Fictioneers. And I came into that in April of 2012. I asked the then creator of the blog if I could join. And what we do is I put up a photo every Wednesday, and everybody is supposed to write a 100-word story beginning, middle, and end to go with the photo. And I started out as one of the crowd, and by October, when Madison said she was stepping down, I was so hooked on doing these stories, I begged her to let me take it on. And in 3 years, we have gone from about 20 to 30 participants every week to sometimes over 100.
Wow.
And because of Friday Fictioneers, I have a blog following of over 2,400 people.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so I'm sure that's also where, you know, why the novels are being successful is I have readers that I would never have had.
Mm.
So I'm very proud of Friday Fictioneers and hoping to get a book of my flash fictions published. And I do have a publisher that has said she was interested. I haven't had time to pursue it lately, though.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, I retired in October from cake decorating, which I did I did that off and on. I was also a sign maker for a local grocery chain. And I was, you know, busy trying to keep up with my writing and a full-time job. And after I retired, you know, I thought, well, I'll have more time. I'm busier now than I ever was.
That's what many, many people say. And that was the case for me, too. And that's a beautiful thing.
It is, because I'm pursuing my passion. I'm absolutely loving my life right now.
Well, what are your future plans, Rochelle?
Right now, learning to market is a big thing. I've hit up a couple of Barnes & Nobles, and so far we have an area Barnes & Noble that is going to carry the book, trying to get some book signings going. I think my plans right now are to put one foot in front of the other and keep doing what I'm doing.
Makes sense. makes absolute sense. You know, so many people have all kinds of pipe dreams and don't follow common sense, which seems to be the way to success as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And really, 10 years ago, I thought this was a pipe dream.
But,
you know, it's like I really felt that God led me to the people that I needed to meet at the time that I needed to meet them. And I look back on that, and at no time did the word "I quit" come into play. It's like no. This is what I need to be doing. And I remember when the one agent turned me down, saying that it was a story everybody knew. It was like her rejection letter said, I wish you luck in finding an agent to prove me wrong. And I said, well, she just threw down the gauntlet, didn't she?
She sure did. Well, that's a beautiful story. Do you have any parting words for us, Rochelle?
You put me on the spot.
Sorry
my
about
mind
that.
Went for someone
well,
who's
maybe I could come at that from a different vantage point. What have you learned from your journey that you have brought into your today that is shaping your current life philosophies on putting one foot in front of the other?
Well, across the banner of my blog is my ultimate motto, which is growing older is inevitable, optional.
I love it. I love it. Well, you know, there are so many people that, for whatever reason, never do grow up. There are a lot of Peter Pans out there, and then there are just a lot of big babies out there. But
yeah, there's a difference between being childish and childlike.
Well, let's talk for just a couple of moments about acquiring wisdom, because that seems to be a thread that's been woven throughout some of our discussion. Where do you think wisdom has come through for you, and how important is it to cultivate wisdom?
Well, I think, you know, some of when I think of my life and how many times I almost succeeded in killing myself, And finally, well, From Silt and Ashes really described where I was 20 years ago this month. I literally had to pick myself up out of the ashes after I had done a nosedive in a thrift store because I had gotten to a point with my eating disorder where I realized if I don't stop this, I am going to die. And that's when I really started living. And, you know, everything now I look back and I'm grateful for what I've been through. And I think a lot of wisdom came through there. And you know, if my experiences can help another person, then it's worth it.
How important do you think gratitude is for the cross, the so-called crosses that you've had to bear in your life has been?
Oh, extremely important. I mean, if you have, I believe a person has to be grateful. I mean, there's so much, especially in this country, that we have to be thankful for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, it is the most important thing. It's like, I could have died that day, and I didn't. I'm grateful. And I'm grateful for every morning, every day.
Was it just the insight that came to you that day, or was there some particular event that propelled you into the belief that you were going to die if you didn't change?
Well, yeah, passing out and realizing it was because my blood pressure was extremely low. I mean, I had so depleted my own body that I realized then and there that if I didn't stop, I would die, and I didn't particularly want to do that.
Mm.
You know, I thought I did until that moment. there's something about being flat on your face in front of a crowd of people that very sobering.
Mm. That sounds like it's a humbling experience, and that it served as a giant wake-up call for you.
It did, and I was also fortunate in having family that supported me. You know, a husband that never washed his hands of me and said, I'm over this, you know. He was right there and went through therapy with me. So I'm very grateful for him.
Well, while we're on the subject and with just a few minutes remaining, what would you say to people that are dealing with eating disorders that would provide them with some hope and some words of wisdom?
Oh, dear. You don't have to die. I mean, that's a tough one to just boil that down in a couple of words.
Don't worry. We can go beyond the hour mark. So please say whatever is in your heart.
Yeah, I've known a couple, one woman in particular that, you know, you don't have to die. You don't have to follow this route. There are other ways to control your life besides eating, besides food, because an eating disorder is a control issue. Generally, the overweening theme is I can't control anything in my life. I can control what goes into my mouth. And then suddenly it's controlling you. And it's like, you don't have to die. You don't have to hate yourself. And it is. It's about learning to love yourself and not believing the beast that's telling you that you're not good enough.
Well, it seems to me... from what I've heard from other spiritual thinkers, that love is indeed the greatest foundation for any of us in embracing our lives, the totality of our lives, ourselves. And once we can do that with ourselves, then we have the capacity to bring that to others. What do you think about that?
I do. It's like the analogy, I've heard it many times in therapy. In an airplane, they tell you when the oxygen mask comes on, you put it on yourself first, then the child.
Right.
It's like if you don't take care of yourself, if you don't love yourself, then you don't have the capacity to love anyone else.
Well, I think that says a lot. And unless you have anything else to add, let's just put out your website one more time and also say where your books are available.
Okay, they are. Okay, well, I actually have two websites. One is the Addicted to Purple, which is my blog site, which is Rochelle Wisoff Fields. .wordpress.com, and I have another website, RochelleWordArt.com. And my books are, Please Say Kaddish for Me is available on BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com, also available at Waterstones.com, Angus and Robertson's Book World, Fishpond, BookDepository.com. I've had some busy publishers. and From Silt and Ashes right now is available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. And also they're available from W&B Publishers, which is ArgusBooks.com.
Well, Rochelle, I wish you the best of luck, and I hope that you have great success as a result of the events that are unfolding this year. Please stay in touch and let me know how you do.
I will. Thank you, David.
You're welcome. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. God bless.